Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
The Specialist Film Will are back, and today we are covering a little bit more of The Traitors, and we thought we'd add a little fun spin to this. This was an idea that we got last time. We were talking about how to fix The Traitors, and we said to ourselves, what roles could they include in The Traitors from One Night Ultimate Werewolf that could potentially work and make the game a little bit more fun and a little bit different? For anybody who's not familiar with One Night Ultimate Werewolf, it is essentially The Traitors, just a shortened version where the werewolves are the traitors and the villagers and other people on the villagers team, which we'll get into those roles, are trying to find the werewolves.
So the faithful.
Faithfuls versus the traitors. That's all it is. But is there a way to make it where the faithful aren't just plain old villagers and actually can have some say in what's going on or gain some knowledge or have some influence? So this should be pretty fun. I mean, Will, we used to play this game a lot.
All the time. Yeah, this is a great version. I think, honestly, maybe there is some value here for another show that isn't The Traitors. The Traitors is so successful. I think the biggest difference that we should highlight for those that do not know the game is that there's a reason why the game is called One Night Ultimate Werewolf. They actually have a different game called Ultimate Werewolf where it is played over rounds. And we do have werewolves just like traitors that we go from round to round and they stay consistent. One Night is like you play it, you get your roles, and then it's over after one round. And that's what makes it so fun because it's like there's a lot of chaos, a lot of wackiness. And hey, maybe that doesn't work on the traitors. I'm curious still. I hope we don't go through these roles and just say, well, that would never really work. Especially, they have a lot of expansions for this franchise, like One Night Ultimate Alien and Vampire. And I think they like have multiple phases. They add like a dusk portion in addition to night and day, and like tokens. And a lot of this stuff will not work for TV, but I'm pretty confident we will find at least one gem of an idea. But I just want to get that out there. That is the main difference, that this game, One Night, and the One Night series is made for like a quick 10 minutes of fun, and then everything resets, whereas The Traitors is, you know, a 13-episode long TV show.
Yeah, so pretty much One Night Ultimate Werewolf is the miniature version of Mafia. I know people play Mafia a lot more often, and The Traitors is essentially more of Mafia. But I was going through some of these, and I'm excited to talk about them because even if they don't work perfectly in the form they are, there is a way to tweak them where even they're relevant for just like one episode maybe,
right,
or something like that, which could be fun because the One Night Ultimate Werewolf idea is it's just 5 to 10 minutes of fun. Well, maybe these things can be introduced where if you win a challenge, you get to take on one of these roles in a unique way that can gain information or that can help you understand something or give you an objective that can win you some personal cash or something along the way or give you an advantage in the game. So I think there's something here for sure. It's just going to be a matter of what.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest flaws that we have mentioned with the traders is that they have to fill out a full TV schedule of 13 episodes in order on the streaming service Peacock, and that you don't really know when the game, like the game should be, a good game design of this type of format should be able to end at any point. And that what Werewolf does so well, or One Night Ultimate Werewolf, is that we have an ending. So it allows us to do all these kind of crazier things. And even like Mafia, if you play a real game of Mafia, that can end after a few rounds, and that's okay. That's not okay with the traders. So maybe adding some of these roles, like you said, especially if they're more episodic, it allows us to feel like, oh, this is the episode with this unique twist or format break. And I don't know, could just make the overall flow of the season work a bit better. I think a great example of this is the chalice that we saw Parvati do in season two with the poisoning. Now, that isn't a role in Mafia or Werewolf or anything like that, but that was a one-off episode format break that was super compelling and done really well. So I do agree, Phil, if we can find these kind of one-off that we're not adding like five or six roles to the entire game that's going to spin over the course of the season and overcomplicate things and over just, you know, blur all the lines of who's doing what and switching and all that. We just want to find like, you know, maybe one or two episode long little segments that would really spruce up the show.
So how do you want to do this? Should we go in order of the wake up? Should we start with the roles who don't wake up? Like,
I want to. I actually want
the original package.
We'll start with the original package.
I don't want a daybreak or anything yet.
Again, maybe you've done a little bit more looking through these. I'm kind of just going from memory at this point. We have these up and we're going to, you know, go through them. I do want to start. I don't want to start doing this and have it be a dud. So I'm going to start with one I actually think would be a winner, and this would be the Tanner role. Now, I don't know if you want to bring it up or read the official thing, Phil, but I've always thinking of this, like the Tanner role to me is just such a, it's funny. It would be so entertaining. And let me describe it. So the Tanner only wins if he dies. So basically the Tanner's goal in this Raiders format would be to get murdered, not to get banished, but the Tanner would have this goal of like, I need to get murdered. The story in this game is that the Tanner's life is so miserable, he wants to die. And yeah, that's a little sad, dark, a little depressing, but I think we could fit that into the dark undertones of what the trader already provides. I think they would do a good job of hamming it up, and it wouldn't be too serious. And you know, we don't want to delve too much into like talking about suicide and all that, but I think the show would find that right tone. And I especially think this role works with someone who's like, I can do the show, but I can only do it for like, I'm only available for the first 10 days. Of like the 20 to 25 day shoot schedule. Someone that you know would be good TV, they have a tough schedule, and it's like they're gonna just play to get murdered. But I think what makes it work so well in the traders is that we have two ways of elimination, right? We have, you can get murdered, but you can also get banished. And if you are too over the top, that like in a way that you're gonna get the traders to murder you, if that's your goal, you might also be raising so many flags for the faithful that they end up banishing you and then you don't win. And then now we have to talk about what is the incentive here. Mm-hmm. I think this would just be a personal prize deal. I know we've talked a bunch when we've talked to the traders and the prize pool and the money. And we don't care about the money. And even on the Deal or No Deal Island, like personal offers feel a little bit weird. I think here it's okay because that's not our end goal. Our end goal of this isn't to get some person, some celebrity money. Our end goal is to provide a really entertaining episode of TV. And the way to do that is through the incentive of a personal offer. So it doesn't bother me there because that's just a mechanism to get this whole idea to work. So I'm starting with the Tanner.
And Alan says this role would have been great for people who wanted to leave, like Kate, which is true. And also, actually, we saw a version of the Tanner last season without the traders influencing or putting it into the game, when they tried to trick them into picking Bergy or Peter. I forget exactly how it played out, but I think they try to pick Bergy to be murdered. And then Bergy comes in with his shield because he had the shield. So essentially he's playing it to try to be murdered. It works out. So it is something that works. Now, can the traders actually take this role and create something that is production based and works. And I think they can, because it worked so well. And that was a great episode of TV, probably the best episode of last season, or one of the couple best episodes. And I think that there's a way to do this. And you were saying like a personal incentive or something along those lines, or you just are gaining so much information where like the goal, Alan can say to you tonight, you want to be the person that the traitors murder. And if you can convince them to murder you, not only do you get to stay in the game, but now what information can you gain from that fact? Like, you don't actually get kicked out of the game. And that would be a tweak, obviously, of this role. But it's giving you the motivation of trying to be taken out. We see this with the minion role as well, which we'll talk about later. But I feel like there is something that can be done with the Tanner for sure. That is a fun twist on it. Almost like when Tony was trying to get the fire tokens in Winners at War, where he's like trying to draw attention to himself, which is not something Tony was trying to do the whole season. I think the Tanner was a good place to start for sure.
Yeah. And I do think there is a world. Yeah. It's not prize money that you win information. If you're able to get murdered, it becomes a little bit more murky where it's like, okay, the traitors are like, we just chose to murder Phil and he's here at breakfast. What's going on there? There wasn't a shield available, or maybe there was. And then we have this shield thing, and then it might, I don't know, it becomes a little bit convoluted.
I think this is a good one.
I kind of like the idea to stick really true to the Tanner story, that he actually, or she, if it's a woman, that they actually want to die. Like, that is their goal. They want their lives to, I want to be murdered. There's something very funny and unique about that idea. And again, it pairs so well with someone who's like, yeah, I can only do the show for the first 8 to 10 days or something, where it's like, we enter, and it's like, my goal is to get murdered and I get 50K if I do. And if I don't, I have to leave without anything. And like, I think it's just a little side mission that would just add so much levity and fun to this. So yeah, read this one, Phil.
Yeah. And Odette says, what if the Tanner gets voted out and he takes the entire pot with him, and then the pot starts over from zero? I think that is a way they could do this.
To do that, you'd really need a time limit though. Like, you need to do this by the fifth murder, you must do it. Because if you go too late into the season, you're like, okay, I'm just going to play a normal game and then murder me at final five. And then there's no more time to make up that pot. We have the winner basically of the season is the Tanner. That could work, especially if they're sticking with the pot mechanic, which we talked through.
I really like what you said, where it's like, it does add such a fun element, because when you think about this, like, if somebody comes into the game and they go into that thing and it says, your goal is to be murdered within the first five episodes, and you'd win $50,000 or something, it's like, oh shit.
It's just a fun little wrinkle. And it's just like, again, like, we don't care if this person really gets $50,000. We care about the result of seeing what they're going to do to get themselves murdered without getting banished, which is just a fine line there. So,
and maybe if they go past the time, like, maybe they get past the five episodes, now they just play as a normal villager for the rest of the game. A normal faithful.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's kind of going against my theory of this is someone who is really tight schedule wise with casting. Like, can you imagine? I think like Dr. Will last season, he had that like terribly tiny role of like guest hosting a challenge, and it fell completely flat. Like, could you imagine if he was just like, yeah, I can only be here for 7 days.
Yeah.
And they do that instead of wasting him. And then he just goes because he has other things to do. A lot of the people, like, there are so many shows right now casting people that are former reality stars. We see very few newbie shows getting fully off the ground lately, unless it's like a dating show or something, especially for these competition shows. It's heavily repeat, you know, TV personalities, and they are busy. They get booked up. And so this would just be a great way to get someone in that would otherwise not be able to do it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really fun point. And maybe then when they wake up after that last murder, if he doesn't get murdered, he leaves and the person who was murdered leaves. And maybe Alan keeps it very vague about, oh, so two people are gone. That would be not explaining to them why two people are gone would be one of the least controversial.
You know what? This person's gone. Or even if you reveal it, like, yeah, they had another show to go to, or like they could only be here this long. They actually tried to get murdered, but totally failed. And that could be actually a fun reveal, or you keep it mysterious. Either way, where do you want to go next? I think the Tanner is just like one that we both agree there's ways to work that in.
there are definitely ways to work that one in. The one I want to do next is actually the only other role that doesn't wake up in the game aside from the villager and the tanner, and that is the hunter. And I feel like the hunter, there is, this would be one that would be tweaked. And this is what I was talking about earlier. Like, this isn't one where the rules would be exactly the same, but here's how it goes. In the voting, the hunter, if voted out, kills whoever they are voting for. So maybe you could keep it this way. And it could be like they do the banishment round table. And when everybody votes, let's say Will was the hunter and he votes for me and I'm a traitor, I go home because Will also got the most amount of votes. So you're able to take two people out at the same time. But I think another thing that could make this fun is if like the hunter has some ability where there is one person whose vote counts more. Or something along those lines. And maybe this is like during a murdering ceremony or something like that, or murdering ceremony, whatever you want to call it, where the traitors don't actually go up and murder. And instead, a hunter gets to wake up in the middle of the night and hunt one person that they want to eliminate from the game. And this would be a role that would be gifted to somebody one time for winning a challenge or for gaining something rather than just getting a shield. They would get this role as the hunter where they could either, if they get the most votes at the banishment ceremony, whoever they vote for also goes home, or they get to go and do the traitor ceremony instead of the traitors, and they pick the person who goes home that week.
Yeah, I think this one would just require some pretty specific balancing in that, like, I don't know, if winning one challenge, you just get to eliminate somebody and there's nothing they can do to really, you know, defend themselves. And I know, hey, that's the name of the game anyway. Like, traitors are out there and they just pick someone to murder and that's it. And like, if you didn't win a shield and challenge, you're screwed. I get that's already kind of part of the game, but this would be like someone could murder. I mean, you could eliminate a traitor in kind of an unfair way with this, or a faithful where it's like, I just think it's Phil, or I just don't, you know what? Phil's not in my alliance, so I want to challenge. Now Phil's gone. I don't know if that's the most like rewarding. I'm not saying we can't make this work. I think what you, the most interesting part about this, and this is sort of like the Tanner, is like, if you can get the votes onto yourself, then you are able to be rewarded.
And maybe you don't go home, just the person you voted for.
Yeah, I think that would have to be it. And so it's similar to the Tanner, but the Tanner, remember, wants to be murdered outright during the night portion. And then the hunter would be like, I want to be banished. And then they go and do circle of whatever, circle of truth. Is that what we call it here?
I think it's just the round table, but yeah.
No, it's when they stand up after the vote and they get revealed.
Yeah.
The round table and the circle of truth.
Yeah.
So then I guess at that point you have to, maybe you do the circle of truth, but they end it short. And it's like, whoa, we actually don't know. We're not going to reveal. Mm-hmm. That person's still in the game, picks someone else to be banished. And they wake up and find out, something like that.
Yeah. I think there's ways to manipulate it with the hunter. And I think it could be a fun addition to the game because, like, maybe that's giving too much power to one player. And maybe it doesn't work with like the murdering in the middle of the night instead of the traitors. But I do think, like, if the hunter, if you earn a hunter role, it's almost like getting an immunity idol, right? You earn the hunter role, you get banished, and we don't see anybody with any protection at the banishments. The protections only extend to the traitors portion, the murdering portion of the game. So if the hunter gets banished, they're safe and their vote is the only one that counts. That kind of works like a hidden mini idol. And maybe it only is good for one episode so that like the hunter really can only utilize this once. And maybe that makes it fall flat too often, so they wouldn't take it. Or maybe there's a way to make it, this is useful for two or three episodes or something like that. Like, I don't know, but this could impact the banishment ceremony, which could be good for the game. Cause right now there's no way to save yourself at the banishment ceremony, because the more you talk, the bigger the hole you dig.
Yeah, I think you'd probably have to do it in a one-off thing. The good part about it, though, is you're probably not married to it in the edit and post-production if it does fall flat. Yeah. Meaning that if Phil, you win the challenge, and then you're like, okay, all I got to do is make sure I get the votes tonight, then I can send anyone else I want home. Like, this is great. I think it's really fun. We have a clear objective. It's difficult to do. What are you going to do to achieve this objective? Great. you try to get votes, everyone's like, oh no, we're already all decided it's Will. Like, this is like the most obvious thing. We finally can get him. Like, it's like Dan last season, where it's like, finally, Dan, everyone has been sniffing you out. And like, finally, it's just kind of his time. And like, Phil, you don't get any votes. And it's like, man, well, it didn't really play out, even though it's a good idea. Well, then the story of that episode, you just never include it ever exists.
It's like Omer getting that extra vote or whatever he got, or the idol nullifier or whatever in season 42, where like they just never told us. And then Omer revealed it in Exit Press because it never
came up. No, it happens in Survivor probably more than you think. I mean, there's some full-on challenges that go unaired, and that's not unique to Survivor either. Mm-hmm. If there's things that don't play out, again, as long as the story is not married to whatever we're adding in, some of these will be easier to kind of just toss to the side and not air them. Others will probably be like, okay, we're doing this thing no matter what. You know, with the Chalice thing with Parv, I believe like that was just a bonus murder, right? It wasn't like in replacement of.
No, I think it was the murder. I don't think there was a murder that night.
Well, there wasn't another one. So I wonder, it's like if Parv wasn't able to do it, do they go up to the turret and make a decision to murder, or like they just don't get to murder anybody that night, which is fine. I think there's still some suspense there. There's some. She doesn't need to be successful for it to be interesting, but just in the event that it fell completely flat, they could be like, all right, let's just go back and do a normal.
Right? Yeah. And then we have this comment here from Alan that says, maybe they could hide the hunter role in the house and it can only be used for a limited time after they find it. So maybe it is something where, like, you know, when she pulled out the book and there's the chalice, like maybe there is something where you win a challenge and then there's a clue to some advantage in the game and the hunter is the advantage. Cause that could actually save somebody. So I don't know.
Do you think, I just don't know if it works over multiple episodes, because then whoever finds it's then basically unbanishable for however long it lasts. They can still be murdered, of course, but there's something about the urgency of like, you need to do it for this banishment ceremony. Just how Parv, you need to poison somebody by midnight or whatever it was on the card. Hey, we don't know the timing. She probably had plenty of time to do it, but it does create some suspense for the audience that like, okay, Phil, you have earned all like this huge, powerful thing to just send home whoever you want. But you have to get this done. It's almost like the Cody Beads situation in season 43, where it's like he found the Beware advantage right before tribal. And it's like, you need to get beads from every one of your tribe mates' bags. And he's wheeling, dealing beads. And then we have that suspense of, is he going to accomplish his goal? And we actually go to tribal council not knowing whether he even has his vote. And that vote is very important to the plan that we're at least being told.
And maybe too, maybe the hunter doesn't even murder, but like maybe there is a way so you can keep the urgency on it of like whoever the hunter votes for at that banishment ceremony, they get some note that's like, you have been targeted by another player. Just to like put like some suspense into the game of like, what does that mean? Where the hunter is like, I'm hunting you.
Well, that is interesting. I don't know about like creating a new role for it and naming it and calling it, but I do think there's something like whoever the hunter voted for at that banishment ceremony is gone. So then we're not doing a double step.
Yeah, you know either either they're gone or like eliminated. There's a way to, or there's like a way to warn them like that you've been targeted by somebody here. Like, I don't know, like maybe there's something more they can do that they can build up the story of like whoever the hunter picks now their days are numbered unless they can figure something out because the hunter is hunting them and has singled them out. So whoever they vote for at that banishment ceremony now to stay in that game, like that person has to find something by the time something else happens just to give more substance to the episodes.
Yeah. And I don't know if this is, I mean, I feel like there are other roles where I can't remember. I don't know if I've even played all these expansions, but like, I think there are certain roles where it's like, you need to eliminate this role, like find out who it is and eliminate them. That's your winning condition. Again, I can get a little bit convoluted, but if I am like, okay, I need to take out the whatever, the troublemaker or something, that's another role, then I have to then deduct who that is and eliminate them. I don't know. That could be getting too far away from Traitors vs. Faithfuls, which is something we actually want more of. And when we were discussing how to fix the show, that we don't want it to be about alliances. We really do want it to be about the two teams and the players and the roles and them like living up to like being an actual traitor or being an actual faithful instead of kind of gaming how it all works. But yeah, there's something there with the hunter.
Let me jump in here and say a couple that I think never work just because we're 20 minutes in. We've only talked about two roles. I think a couple, the drunk, I don't think works. It doesn't even really work in the regular game.
I mean, it's always fun when you include the drunk. The drunk just switches two cards and never without looking at them, right? So they're just like
No. So the drunk wakes up and exchanges their card with a card in the center. So they know what they know they put the drunk card in the center, but they don't know what they have.
But they don't know what they are.
No.
Right. And that's all about switching roles and cards. And I think there are actually quite a few of those roles. So yeah, anything with like switching cards, we don't have cards here. I mean, I guess technically you could have like envelopes or paper, but that's not really part of, you know, the format of the show. So yeah, anything with switching. So the troublemaker is another one we can rule out, which basically the troublemaker will switch two other players' cards without looking at them, right?
Yeah, and they can't swap their own. But again, and this is coming down to like, is there a way that you can finagle some of these? Like when we talk about the robber or the seer, I think there is a way that you can finagle those that makes sense. But with the troublemaker, I don't think it makes sense. The insomniac is another one. When the insomniac wakes up, they look at their card to see it has if it has been changed. So like when you're playing faithfuls versus traitors, the insomniac can't really do much. The only way the insomniac can really help is if they get to wake up in the middle of the night and see one of the traitors. But then that's such a disadvantage.
And that's more of a seer role. Too.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about because I think there is something there.
And then another one that I just want to quickly say, no way, is the doppelganger. I hate playing with the doppelganger.
You never play with it. It's too convoluted, right?
Too convoluted. When the doppelganger wakes up, she chooses someone's card to look at. She does not switch cards with her target. She has now that role and copies that role's win conditions and abilities. Her actions change depending on who she sees. That one is just so damn complicated. And it's too much going on, and that just wouldn't work, especially if
roles. And this is something else about the game of One Night Ultimate Werewolf is that part of the fun, and as you can tell through so many of these roles that we're going through, is figuring out what card you have when you wake up, because there are so many roles and ways for your initial role to switch. And that's fun to play as a player. You know, you have 5 minutes, everyone's talking. Well, I was the troublemaker. I switched you two, but it's like, is that person even like telling the truth? No, I was the troublemaker and the werewolf's making it, all that. Whereas like, I don't know if that's as much fun to watch. And I think what's more fun to watch is people that know their roles, know their objectives, and then putting plans and emotions to achieve those objectives instead of having the chaos and lack of information. And not that none of that can exist here. I mean, we do see the whole faithful team have a lack of information on who the traitors are. But at least they know what their goal is, and at least they know who they are. So I think, yeah, anything where players are like unsure of what their own win condition is, I don't know if that makes for the best TV, despite it being very fun to play.
Yeah. And then another one that I just feel like we would always do just instead of with villagers, just because it's more fun, is the Mason. There must always be two Masons. When they are called to wake up, the Mason look around to see if there are any other Masons. If a Mason does not see another Mason, the Mason knows the other Mason card is in the center with the other two cards. It's just a faithful, like you're not doing much with that. It's just a way to give people a way of waking up so that there's not just so many villagers in the game, but it's essentially just a villager. It's a powerless card. So there's nothing there. So,
yeah, I mean, I think there might be looking at this one a little bit more because you were just about to move on from this. It seemed like.
Yeah, because I don't feel like there's really much to it because all the Mason finds out is that the other like that there is another Mason or there isn't another Mason.
I think there's something to be said, though, for a faithful having a guarantee of somehow knowing, okay, I know this person is a faithful.
And I was going to kind of talk about that with the seer. So maybe the Mason and the seer kind of work together in this, because then the seer, when the seer wakes up, they can either look at a player's card or two cards in the center. So I was going to talk about that more with the seer than with the Mason, where it's like,
there's something fun about the Mason where it's like, okay, so let's say we're both faithful, Phil, and we get, you know, maybe this is from winning a challenge, we finding in the house. Again, we don't really need to talk about how we introduce these to the game unless it's super specific. But look, you can get these in the game in a number of different ways. And that basically your goal, you know, each night you get to like make a guess at who you think is, you know, your partner in crime. I don't know. We could come up with a better name than Mason or partner in crime. But basically that we need to figure out who each other are, but you can't let it be known to any of the other players. So it's like, am I like winking at you throughout the day, Phil, so that we both write each other, mm-hmm. so that we both guess? I don't know. There's something interesting about like finding your hidden pair And then you get your, I don't know, you get some reward. Maybe you get a shield. I don't know.
And then Oded says Mason's actually good for the traders as you have one other confirmed faithful. And then it says, plus you can do it as a condition that if one goes, the other also goes. So maybe there is more to the Mason then.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah, you become, again, not the best name, but partner in crime. And that if either of you are banished or murdered, you both go, but you do have now like two votes to work with. You know, you're both faithful. You both know you're both on the right side. And maybe that's just it. You don't even need to find your pair. It's just that you guys are going to play as one, and you now, you basically just have an extra vote when you're working with two people. And it'd be funny too. And again, I'm okay with this if it makes good TV. You pick two people that don't get along. You know, you pick Kate and I forget who's been one of Kate's enemies. I feel
everyone.
Like she's had quite a few. So you just pick Kate. And then randomize the other person that actually keeps it there, maybe. Yeah, Kate and Peter. And you get these two people like, all right, we're both faithful. We need to work together because we have these two votes. But if either of you, us go home, and maybe that goes up into a certain point where it's like, you know, you have to survive three banishment ceremonies or three nights, whether that's murder or banishment. And then once that happens, you get some reward and then you're good to kind of play a solo game. But where it's like you have to kind of look out for the other person and make sure you're both safe.
Yeah, so maybe there is something there with the Mason. And then with the Seer, do you think there's ever anything there with the Seer where the Seer gets confirmation of one thing? Or is that... Because that's how I was thinking about this Mason. You pretty much just said it for the Mason, but that's what I was thinking for the Seer.
The Seer is tricky because it works so well in a one-night scenario where it's like,
okay... It's the best card in the game, in my opinion.
This person knows who one of the werewolves are, essentially. Or they know everything, right? And then what's the rule on this? Can we read the seer
looks at one other player's card but doesn't change anything, or they can look at two cards from the middle. But the nice thing with the Seer is the Seer sees something, they know what that person is, and then they happen before the robber. Is it before the robber or is it after?
I think they go early because it's such a powerful card.
The troublemaker, all that. So then as cards start to get switched, the Seer doesn't know who's getting switched be after them. But the Seer knows confirmed at least who one person is, unless they look at the two in the middle. So I was kind of viewing the Seer as you were viewing the Mason, which is you get one other person who's confirmed as a faithful, essentially. But maybe they are just too similar because the Seer, there's not enough ways. And I feel like with these other roles, if you're going to introduce these other roles, you shouldn't make anybody be privy to those other roles. I feel like that's not fun. I feel like the Seer shouldn't get to be like, oh, that person's a hunter. What does that really mean? I feel like the hunter needs to kind of be its one-off thing.
Yeah, no, I think we need to keep all these at one-off. I don't know if we're combining a lot of these in, you know, current near the same episode, even though, you know, that is a very fun part of One Night Ultimate Werewolf is like the way these roles combine with each other. We're like, oh, and then people have gone crazy online being like, all right, if you get a 7-player game, use these 10 cards because these are going to give you the most fun and the most chaos. And then you can like up the level of randomness and skill and all that. So it is fun to combine them, but I don't think we need to do that during
the traders. We've played some silly games where like literally nobody even knew what they were by the end.
And you're laughing and you're having fun.
Yeah,
for sure. But it's just like, okay, that was just like a random fun 10-minute thing. And it's not going to give us a compelling story.
Because it's like you play with two werewolves, a drunk, a tanner, a hunter, like... And then a dream wolf. Like you have no idea what the hell you're doing by the end of it. The dream wolf will be fun to talk about. I want to bring up now. So we have two roles left. It's the minion and the robber. I want to talk about the one that actually made us think of doing this podcast, which is the minion. So
the minion is a very good role.
I feel like this would be perfect for the traders. When the minion wakes up, all werewolves are told to put their thumb up so the minion can see who they are. Even if the minion is killed, as long as no werewolves die, the minion wins along with the werewolves. If there are no werewolves present, but a minion is, then the minion must ensure that anybody other than themselves die, basically assuming the role of a werewolf, as otherwise there would be no way for the village team to win. When it comes to the minion knows who the werewolves are, but the werewolves don't know who the minion is. And I feel like this could be really fun in the traders, where you have somebody who is working alongside the traders, trying to keep the traders as safe as possible, but the traders don't know that this person is working with them. And so this person wins if the traitors win. And maybe there's a punishment for the traitors if they accidentally murder the minion. But the minion is somebody who does have the information about this. I feel like this could be a really, really, really fun, good role to have in the show.
Yeah, I think what makes it work well in the game is that the minion knows, but they still technically aren't a werewolf. And I think that's what you'd have to figure out.
They're just on their team. So if they get killed, the werewolf and them win.
Yes, it just has to be very clear that, look, they're not going to the turret. They're not helping make decisions. They're just like an extra kind of piece, and the minion's kind of helping them along. I don't know. I think my biggest concern with it is, like, do we want to give the traitors more help? Like, do we need
But the traitors don't know who's helping them.
Right. And then how does that work? How does that work? Like, sharing prize money? Like, they're just a third of the...
Maybe the minion is somebody who gets included into the game, and this would be a season where you don't keep bringing more traders in. So, like, you start off with three traders, and rather than bringing in a new trader if somebody loses, maybe you start off with four traders and a minion. So five of the 21 people are actually playing for the traders team, but the minion's not getting to make the decisions. And no matter how much they try to influence it, it's like a little bit more powerless of a position. But every traitor can be eliminated from the game, and then Alan can be like, well, we're still playing. And, like, they could still win because they're not on the village team.
Yeah, and I think we'd have to be clear, too. The minion would have to do enough, though. Because, like, what if you're the minion and you get yourself killed, like, episode 5, and then the traitors win in episode 12, or, like, the finale, whatever.
I don't think if you're the minion, you want to die. I think if you're the minion, you're just...
Right, like, I'm just saying, but technically...
You can die and you win, but I think in this you would lose. You're still trying to stay alive, but you're on the minion team, or you're on the werewolf team, the traitor team, instead of the faithful team. That's
all. So you still have to make it to the end.
Yes.
I feel like you have to make it to a certain point, and then you can die. Like, if you make it to the top 6 and the traitors win, you also win. Something like that.
Something
or
like
else,
that.
Or else, because you have to.
If or maybe you become traitors, a traitor at some point. Like, if you're a werewolf long enough, or if you're the minion,
that could be it. You like, you are a traitor. You're a delayed traitor edition. Like, basically, you have to survive until episode 10, and at that point, you will become a traitor. And in that meantime, they know who the traitors are and have to make sure. Yeah, but I wonder if you want to eliminate the traitors at that point. So there's fewer left when you become one. I mean, it'd be interesting. I think that this is definitely an interesting role, and this would have to be one as we're talking through it. Like, this would be over multiple episodes.
This, I think, would be a permanent role for the season.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine.
I think that would probably be the only one that would be a permanent role for the season. Maybe that and the Tanner.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we have the robber. Now, obviously, with the robber in the game, when the robber wakes up, they can trade their card with another player's card, then look at their new card. The robber will not wake up again if the role they view is called. So, like, they get to look at it, but, like, if they pick up one that comes later, they don't get to look at it. It doesn't matter for the traders. The robber, it doesn't work necessarily with the way that it works, I don't think, in One Night Werewolf. But I think there's something to be done with a character like the robber in what the traders is doing. And maybe they would just tweak it a lot, but there is definitely a way to make a player on the show have another role that they get to do. Or they're stealing from the traitors, or they can prevent a traitor from going up to the turret or something. Like, there could be something that the robber could do in this game that's not just switching roles with somebody.
So you like this more just the name of the robber?
Yeah.
Having nothing to do with the actual role in the game. Also, we probably should have done this way earlier. Maybe for people who don't know the game, I think we should have given some. I mean, we kind of talked about it. It's one round of Mafia, but basically everyone just is dealt a card. It's literally, like I said, if you're playing with 7 people, you have 10 cards. Everyone gets a card, and then there are 3 left in the middle. So not every role... not everybody gets every role. And then, as Phil mentioned, like, some roles allow you to look at cards in the middle or swap cards out from the middle, trade cards. So people are like, not every player, but a lot of roles are gathering little bits of information. And then once, and this is all done when people's eyes are closed. This is that night, one night, Ultimate Werewolf. This is like, in the traders, when everybody's sleeping and the traders go up to the turret. then everybody wakes up and they you basically talk for 5 minutes trying to like be like, okay, well, I saw this card was here. And then you're basically calling people online. Everyone yells at each other, accusing people. And then you vote to basically murder somebody. If you murder a werewolf, the villagers win. And if you murder anyone but a werewolf, the werewolves win. So just to, if that wasn't clear, I know we had said mafia and most people understand that. And hey, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have some idea
you get the traitors
of the game and you get the traitor, but just wanted to quickly give like a more mechanical overview because some of these roles, it's a lot of card movement stuff.
Yeah. So for me, I just like the idea of a robber in the building, not necessarily though, with the rules that are on here, but I think that would be a fun thing of like somebody gets to steal power from somebody.
Maybe it's like you can steal the traitor role from somebody. So you have somebody who is a traitor. Like let's just say, you know, it's Phaedra last season's a traitor. And then if you're able to pin who a traitor is, you'd have to do this pretty damn early. And maybe you only give the person like one guess or two guesses that you will steal their role essentially. You probably have to die though. Like if I steal Phaedra's role, I'm now the traitor. She's now a faithful. Phaedra now knows.
Is anybody really going to believe that Phaedra was a traitor though? Or Phaedra was a traitor who became a faithful? Probably not. And also Phaedra still has to figure out who that traitor is. Cause if you steal the role and Phaedra doesn't get to wake up the next night, and this other person just goes in her place, she doesn't know who that other person that's
right. She doesn't know who the person who stole her role is. She will know, like, let's just say
she could just be murdered too, though.
Yeah, let's just say it's Rob and Parv and Dan. Okay. She now knows that those two people are traitors. Now she's faithful. That becomes a little murky because it's like, yeah, you're not really supposed to know. And then it's like, you can't tell people, but she can. If she's not putting out names, then she's going to get accused. So I don't know if that works. Maybe it's just like, if you have one guess, you get this advantage. If you have to be sure, you get one attempt to make a guess at who you think a traitor is. If you are right, that traitor's dead and you take their spot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be fun.
I think that could be fun. I like this idea. I think the robber does work.
Again, this has nothing to do with the robber.
Yeah, it's not really that, but it's kind of like that title of role makes
right.
sense.
Right. You're taking someone's role is where we're deriving the idea from. So you are saying, okay, I am like 90% sure Dan is a traitor. Boom, you write Dan's name. Dan's killed. Everyone would be so confused. Everyone's like, wait a second, Dan was 100% traitor. And that could be really fun.
That could like be that really, one. Really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then that makes the traitors have to play the social game with everybody even more so because you don't want to be the person who's getting, you know, your role stolen. Not that they would know, but like, you know, it's kind of like punishing Andrew Savage for putting out Lil.
Yeah, and imagine it's somebody too who's been like one. Like, imagine if this is John from last season, who's just like the 100% faithful guy,
and then he gets this role,
and then he becomes a traitor. You know, again, I don't want to make it too easy for the traitors, but hey, we're two seasons in, and we have one win from each team. So,
and we're just trying to make this fun, damn it.
Yeah, I mean that's what we want to do. We want to make it more fun, and I think we need a better name than the robber.
I agree. There's probably a better name there, but the robber is what made me think of these moments here. So just to run through, because this is the original game, and I don't feel like there's as much available in the future games.
I forget the bonus.
Yeah, I knew we were going to spend the most time on this one. So just to review, the doppelganger's a no. The minion, Mason's probably. The seer, not really. The robber, yes, a very loose interpretation. The troublemaker, no. Drunk, no. Insomniac, no. Hunter, potentially as like a one-off. And then the tanner is just like a yes, that would be fun.
Yes. That's pretty good. I think we
added three or four roles, maybe even five. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Let's move on.
Let's do Daybreak.
Okay. I'm going to share my screen so we can look at some of these. I was not able to, for whatever reason, could not find the PDF of the original roles in the original game or this PDF of the rule document. So I am going to share this so we can, if you're on YouTube, we can see it.
I'm ready. This is Will's favorite. Dream Wolf is coming. That's Will's favorite.
Honestly forget what Dream Wolf. I know it's a werewolf, but it has some sort of special powers. Okay, let's do this.
It doesn't have special powers. It's stupid.
Is this? Can you? Anyone see this, or is this done?
Can you zoom in a little bit?
I can try.
Yeah, if you can zoom in past that 100%, I think that would be good. Yeah, that's much better. So now, if you want to just make, that's much better. You can see the Sentinel, Wolf, Mystic Wolf, all of that.
So yeah, we can look at these guys. We can see the artwork too. We have the Sentinel, Alpha Wolf, Mystic Wolf, Apprentice Seer, Paranormal Investigator, Witch, Village Idiot. Forgot about the Village Idiot. Revealer, Curator, Dream Wolf, Bodyguard.
And we need to start with the Dream Wolf because I think we love playing with that. We love playing with the Dream Wolf. And I think the Dream Wolf is a fun one. And they even say on here, the Dream Wolf might be one of the hardest roles to play. The Dream Wolf, instead of waking up with the other werewolves, he just sticks out his thumb. So all of the other werewolves know who the Dream Wolf is, but the Dream Wolf does not know who the other werewolves are. And this could, we've talked about this a little bit of like, you have a group of traitors and they all know who each other are. And maybe there's a way to include a traitor who doesn't know the other traitors. Now, this is kind of like the reverse minion, right? Minion is somebody who knows who the traitors are and is working alongside them. This is a traitor who's kind of like a toothless traitor. Doesn't get to go up in the turret, doesn't get to eliminate, murder, whatever, but is still working alongside the traitors. So they're trying to figure out who the traitors are in a totally different way than anybody else. And I don't think Alan could announce this role ahead of time because then that would really drastically impact the way everybody played the game. Mm-hmm. But if you, let's say you get hit with this, you're the Dream Wolf, you're the fake traitor, and you go up to somebody and you say, I am a traitor. I'm trying to figure, you finally figure out who a traitor is. And you're like, I'm a traitor. I'm trying to defend you. They're going to think it's such an outlandish claim that like they almost can't not believe it.
Well, I think the traitors would need to know. And I think the way you do this is like episode one, Alan taps three people. One of them gets a special type of note or something. And then two people go. And then Alan tells them that there actually is a third traitor. They're not able to be here. They're not going to make it at night. They're dreaming. They're sleeping.
Yeah, traitors know, but everybody else in the house.
Yeah, the traitors need to know. And they're like, okay, well, one of these people is on our team. It's interesting. I don't know if it's as good as the minion. I think the minion, what we talked about, where you're on the traitors team, but you're not, the traitors don't know about you, and you can still be killed and you're not officially a traitor until you hit some like benchmark episode or night. I think that is a little bit more like tangible and clear. This one, it's like, what's the goal necessarily? I guess it's just you're a normal traitor, but it's like, what is your day-to-day objective? Just to like figure out who the traitors are. And then once you feel confident, are you allowed to go up and say, hey, I am the Dream Wolf?
I think so. I think that's the point, right? Like it gives, like, imagine watching the episode, right? You're watching the episode and using last season example, you have Peter being like, I think Dan's a traitor and I'm also a traitor. And like, at what point are you confident enough to walk up to that person? That's a fun storyline to watch as an audience, because then when that moment happens, you're like, he really has no way of proving it to them. But they, maybe that leads to conversation in the turret where it's like, hey, Parv, did you know Peter came up to me earlier and said he's also a traitor? Do you believe him? Because Alan said there was a third. And it's taking a big risk if you're this character because you don't know.
Yeah. I think at that point, like, look, if there are two traitors and Alan says, hey, you have a third traitor on your team, but it's a sleepy wolf who's dreaming. We'll need a better name, but you get the point. You're told that if someone comes up to you later, you're going to believe them. And I think that's okay. Cause then it's like you go through the first, maybe it's just a short little arc, like the first four or five episodes of the season, a big part of the storyline is the two traitors trying to figure out who their third traitor is. And that third traitor, this Dream Wolf character, walking on eggshells being like, I need to figure this out, but I cannot go up to the wrong person and say that or my game's completely screwed. So, and I think it's fine. Like, I think at some point, once they all know each other, that's fine. Because then we're just back to playing the traders and it's just like a mini little arc and it's not like this game-breaking thing that's going to change all the rules up until the finale.
And like, Alan, this would be fun for a season. I think it would be really funny seeing the traitor trying to find who his allies are. Like, that would be really funny.
Yeah. And I think this is a fun game. It is fun. This is a really fun role. This is why, I mean, for me, I just think the name Dreamwolf is hilarious. And I really dig the art on the card. So I always liked using it when we played, Phil. But also, it was a really fun card to include. Like,
it always made the game fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm in on. Should we spend any time trying to name what's a better name?
It's like a lazy trader.
The you lazy need to come trader, up with the sleepy, like that, the sleepy right?
like
trader,
the jester almost like
the sleepy. Yeah, I mean, we are in a castle, so we can maybe theme it out that way. I mean, we do have a role, I think, called the bodyguard. Maybe it's like you have a bodyguard trader. And they're always on watch. They're protecting you, but they can't be here to make kills because they're on duty. They're on guard. I don't know. A bodyguard, that seems like it fits a little bit into a castle.
Yeah, I feel like the bodyguard will work. Actually, I think that role actually does work for the game, and we can talk about that one when we get there. But yeah, I think the Dreamwolf could be fun. I think it could work in this game. Again, you're not going to put all of these in, but I feel like the Dreamwolf could
castle. Work. Yeah, let's look at bodyguard.
Yeah.
So when everyone votes, the player that the bodyguard points to cannot be killed. If that player received the most votes, the player with the next most votes, at least two, is killed. Recommended for five or more players. That's not a problem for us. When the bodyguard is in the game, it is necessary for all players to turn their cards over right after the vote to see if the bodyguard is pointing to the player with the most votes. The bodyguard is on the village team. Okay. This is fun because this is basically adding a layer of an immunity idol or shield of some sort inside of a banishment, which we talked about how there currently is not a mechanic for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I kind of just like it as is. It's just a point. Whoever the bodyguard points to is awarding a shield. And so it is like an idol in that if I'm the bodyguard, you know, this one-off role for, again, this would be a one-off thing. This couldn't be like a permanent mainstay of a season, is that I need to guess where the majority of the votes are going and act accordingly if I don't want that person to go home. Maybe this is not really a role, but we treat it more like a, I don't know, we call it a sword. You know, we have a shield and now this is a sword. And if I have the sword, whoever I vote for sends that person is now.
But I agree with you on that.
Sword doesn't really make sense.
But I also think a bodyguard makes sense here because if you think about this role, right? Imagine they all sit at the table. The bodyguard is somebody. Nobody knows who the bodyguard is. Last season, this actually would have worked quite well because a lot of people were very confident. Okay, it's going to be Dan or whatever. And then like it ends up being that it's Rachel gets the most votes and Rachel's not a traitor. So the bodyguard can vote for Rachel with everybody else. Rachel gets the most votes. Rachel would go home. And then Alan says, Rachel, you have received the most votes. However, you have been saved by a bodyguard. And it's like, well, what does that mean? And then he could explain, like, one of the people who voted for you actually protected you.
And
now the next most votes goes home. All of a sudden it's like, wow, Dan was a traitor. And now everybody says, wow, the bodyguard just kind of made that happen. Can we figure out what happens there?
And then the traitors need to figure out who the bodyguard is. It's almost like, and this is a role in Mafia, is like the angel who like gets to save somebody. And I don't know if we would call it that way. I think bodyguard works. But yeah, I mean, is it too powerful of a role where it's like, okay, especially with votes like banishment ceremonies at the traitors?
Maybe it only works once.
Yeah, that's why I think it almost works better as like an item or artifact, like an advantage that you play instead of this role that you keep its powers throughout a season. But it could be interesting because then the traitors are like, we need to find out who this bodyguard is because they keep saving people. I think what we've seen with the traders, it's about to get to this point, is that the votes, I feel like, are often pretty predictable.
Yeah. And I think that's where not, like a bodyguard could make that a little bit more fun.
But I'm saying it's that's a negative part for this role, because I think what would work well for it is the uncertainty of who's going to get the most votes and you having to guess correctly, basically playing a hidden immunity idol. And that's where the strategy and the good gameplay and decision-making comes in. Whereas if we know everyone's voting a certain way, then it's like this role becomes way too overpowered, because every banishment ceremony, this bodyguard is just going to throw their...
Well, that's why I think you can only do it once. You can only do it one time. Like, you're the bodyguard. The bodyguard can only use his bodyguard talent one time.
Yeah. So again, that's not a role.
Being a normal villager.
I don't think this is a role. I think we have to call it. They gave you.
You get this and you have it until you use it. But once you use it, it's gone. So, but it's not like you only get it one time. You can have it for multiple votes and use it at the most strategic point.
Right. I'm just trying to think of.
And then Alan says, do you think that the faithful could vote for someone to be appointed as the bodyguard? So you could literally have Alan Cumming come out and say, everybody's going to vote in private for a bodyguard. And whoever gets the most votes will be the bodyguard. It has to be the most votes of somebody who's not a traitor. And that person's a bodyguard. So when that person makes the vote, they aren't confirmed that they know who it is, but they all know that the bodyguard role is a role.
That could be interesting. And then what if a traitor is nominated as bodyguard?
Well, I think they would probably go to the second in command, but I mean, you could have a traitor do it. I mean, that is true. You could have a traitor be a traitor and a bodyguard, and they protect one of their own.
Yeah. I think, again, it's a one-off advantage and not a role. Like, you get this item.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you I just play think
it
the item
good for more than one time. I think it should have like more to it.
Well, I think you are only able to use it once, but you can have it in your possession.
Yeah, it's like an immunity item. You can have it as long as you want. But I've been looking through a little bit here. The witch, when they wake up, may look at a center card. If they do, they must switch that card with someone's card, including their own. I don't really like that.
I mean, where are we here? The witch. Yeah, the witch, that's a card switching one. So
that doesn't really work.
Any card switching, we don't really
That also goes with the Mystic Wolf. The Mystic Wolf, when told to wake up, may look at another player's card. So that's essentially a traitor knowing something. But in this game, the traitors all know who the traitors are and who the villagers are. So that doesn't really... I feel like the Mystic Wolf, there'd be a better version of what they would do there. That would make that work. And then
Alpha Wolf.
Alpha Wolf is confusing to me based on how it's described on my website, where it's... The Alpha Wolf in the game requires another card placed perpendicular to the center cards. This card is a known type of werewolf card. When the Alpha Wolf wakes up, they exchange that card with another player's card. So like, they're essentially selecting somebody.
Yeah, they're assigning. Yeah, you're adding that. Yeah, that's basically recruiting.
Which we've seen.
Yeah,
so
okay.
That doesn't do anything for me.
Sentinel.
The Sentinel, I think, could be interesting. It just kind of feels like a shield, though. When they wake up, place a shield token on any player's card but your own. This prevents that card from being moved or viewed. So it has to do with viewing cards, but also I feel like the Sentinel, it's a shield thing, and the shield's already implemented into the game, so I don't feel like this really adds anything to that.
Well, maybe we call the bodyguard the Sentinel, and if you are the Sentinel, then it's basically you're like by your casting a vote, when you use your Sentinel powers, you're awarding a shield, basically.
Yeah, I think
that works. And then bodyguard is the Dream Wolf. It's a bodyguard traitor.
Maybe
I don't know. Again, I'm not too worried about the names. It's more about the mechanics of these things. What about Apprentice Seer? I doubt this will be good.
Yeah, the Apprentice Seer, when they wake up, may look at one card in the center. So they're not even getting to look at anybody else's card. So it's the Seer, but worse.
Right, it doesn't and do we anything don't have cards game. In the center here.
So. Yeah, it doesn't do anything for this game. Paranormal Investigator is another one that's cards. When they wake up, they can look at two cards. If any of those cards is not a village role, they must stop looking and become that role. So they would essentially become a werewolf or some sort of villain. But they do not wake up when that role is called. So if they get a werewolf card, they don't know who the other werewolves are. The PI card now counts as that for switching purposes. So it's kind of like, again, you become something and then you start spinning it. But I don't feel like that works into the game.
Right. And I think a lot, like, this is an expansion pack here. And I think the biggest issue and the biggest complaint, critique of the original One Night Ultimate Werewolf was like, oh my gosh, I keep playing and like I got villager card again. I got villager eight times in a row. And you're just like, I'm a villager. And so like the villager team didn't have a lot of information, because you don't wake up, you don't do anything as a villager. You're just nobody. You're a faithful in the traders. And so what they did was tried to make more villager roles that gave them ways of gaining information or actions to like mix things up, which was really fun. But it's not like we need everybody in the traders to have some particular role.
So. And okay, I just want to do the village idiot real quick. Cause I remember we played one game, I think, with the Dream Wolf, the werewolves, and then village idiot and the drunk, and everything. Yep. We took all the shit cards. The yes. village idiot, when they wake up, moves everyone card except their own and any card with a shield token to the left or to the right. So literally the village idiot just makes it so nobody knows who they are.
Yes. No one knows anything. And then, but you also have then people working at some point later. So it's like, you can do village idiot, and the village idiot does know that they rotated all the cards. And so that sometimes the village idiot will come out and say that, especially if it's been revealed that like there's a robber or troublemaker or like other things have happened, where they feel comfortable that they're on the villager team, and they'll let everybody know. And then you're kind of like piecing it all together. Again, fun for the game, not something we need to kind of like piece out on the show.
And then the revealer, I don't feel like this works either. The revealer, when they wake up, chooses one player card to flip over face up. And if it's not a village card, then they turn it back face down. So if it is a village card, at least we all get to see who somebody is and what their role is. That's, I don't think that works.
Terrible.
But I think as they're introducing roles, there's not going to be that many roles. So the revealer doesn't really.
Yeah, no, again, and I'm just trying to think of it more as like, one person's like guaranteed faithful.
You or me making that music noise?
I don't hear any music noise.
Oh, so that was me then. Okay, that makes sense.
It's a little bit like we talked about with the Masons. It's like, is it, if someone can be like, get there, it's almost, you're getting your name cleared. Like, you're like, you are not even in contention for being a traitor. Like, you are being 100% guaranteed a faithful. Now at that point, the traitors probably just murder you. That's just like public information, because no one will then, you're not able to throw any suspicion onto that player. But I'm trying to think. Do you have any other reels?
And then the last one is, well, the last one from this package is the curator, which is way too complicated. When they wake up, they place an artifact token on any player's card that doesn't have one, including their own. And then it gets into like, what it essentially turns people into something else.
Yeah.
It's way.
Yeah. We have artifact tokens. Yeah.
I don't think we ever played with the curator,
because we didn't want all these little tokens. We just wanted the roles. And look, they include some of these combo scenarios in here. Total chaos. Is it this one? Doppelganger, alpha wolf, werewolf, robber, witch, troublemaker, village idiot.
We probably played that once, and then we might have taken out the doppelganger because we hate the doppelganger, and we probably put the drunk in.
Yeah. Okay, now we have our order. Yeah, I think there's enough. We've had a pretty good discussion and found enough. I wonder if there's any in Alien or Zombies, but I've never played those games.
Well, let's look at bonus roles real quick.
Bonus roles. That's right.
They had an extra bonus roles really fast. Pack. Alien and Vampire, we could do a whole nother podcast on that if we ever thought, but again, I feel like it's pretty similar. So let's just look at these real quick. The Aura Seer, the Aura Seer wakes, and any player who has moved or viewed any cards or marks must stick out their thumb while keeping their eyes closed. So that's just, you know, a card movement one. That doesn't really help anybody. The prince, when players vote, any votes against the prince do not count. If the prince gets the most votes, the player with the second most votes and dies instead. That's essentially just getting an immunity idol. We've already talked about other ways that can be introduced, so I don't feel like it works here. Cursed, if a werewolf votes for the curse, they join the werewolf team. That could potentially be something a little interesting. I don't know. It's not really like they're recruiting purposefully, but if they vote for somebody, and maybe there's a rule in there that like, if somebody gets the second most votes and they get all of the werewolf votes or all of the traitor votes, they now become a traitor. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't mind that one where it's like, you know, we've seen the traitors recruit. Can we give faithful some ways that they can actually take an active role in becoming a traitor themselves, as opposed to just to like wait around for a recruitment. And we already talked about one. What was it? It was like, if you are able to guess who a trader is, you eliminate them and take their spot. That was the robber variant we talked about, right?
Yeah.
This is a little bit similar to that, but this is instead of eliminating them, it's like if you vote for them, and in this would, again, this would have to be a one-time thing. It's like you earn this thing. If you vote for a trader tonight, you join the trader team. I don't hate that. I think that's the good thing about it. I think it's really simple. It's really clean and it doesn't break the game all that much. Also, you're awarded some information here. So if I have this role or this advantage and I vote for Phil and then I don't become a trader, then I know that Phil is faithful and I can go up to Phil. And maybe that's a little bit more like that Mason mechanic we were talking about, or the aura or the revealer or something, where it's like giving the faithful some ideas of how they can, okay, that person's guaranteed good. And then it's not public information. It's just something that I know personally that Phil is definitely a faithful, and I can use that to my advantage and how I see fit.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like the cursed, actually could work in this game for sure.
It's pretty simple.
Apprentice Tanner is essentially just the Tanner, but somebody on the Tanner's team. So I don't think you would need two Tanners. I think one is fine.
That'd be, so you're trying to get, like, you know, let's say it's Dr. Will in that example. He comes in, someone else is like, all I need is for Dr. Will to die. So
yeah.
The Beholder.
The Beholder wakes and the Seer and Apprentice Seer will stick out their thumb and the Beholder will check their cards to see if it has changed. It's a card checking one, so that doesn't really help anybody. The Squire is essentially the minion. The Squire wakes and all werewolves will stick out their thumb. The Squire may then check the werewolf's cards to see if they have changed. So we wouldn't have that step. So it would just be the Squire knows who the werewolves are. If you are lynched, the werewolves still win. If there are no werewolves, you must have another villager die. So for you to remain alive, that is literally just,
I forgot that's what we, that's the word they use was lynching, because it's like a town. It's like a village. Yeah. And there's a werewolf and infesting the village, and it's a lynching. I forgot about that terminology, but I don't think we've used that.
Yeah, for sure. Then we have the thing that goes bump in the night. It just wakes up and taps a player on the shoulder. That's it. Love that.
Yeah, wait, we played with that, though.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's just like, why?
No, it's just like, it's so people know that you act, like somebody will know that you actually are what you're saying you are.
Yeah, it's like guaranteeing, okay, I'm, and this is obviously the thing is on the villager team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think then they, is there a role where it's like, there's like a thing, but it's like an evil thing?
I have no idea.
Probably.
Body Snatcher goes more along with the aliens. This one doesn't really work. They will exchange their card with another player's card with some restrictions, then exchange their card with a card from the center or pretend to perform their action. So like, this one doesn't really work.
I don't get it. Yeah,
it's too complicated. Nostradamus, this one doesn't really work either. They can view up to three cards. If they see a card that is not on the village team, they stop and are now on that team. If you die, you will lose, but your team will win as long as their win condition is completed. You will tap the last roll you saw in the app and it will be publicly announced that the team the Nostradamus has joined. We'll say it.
Okay, all right, that's the last one here. Empath.
The empath wakes and the app will ask certain players to point in the direction of a player based on what the app asks them to. While keeping their eyes closed, the empath will see what everyone does. Yeah, app will ask players to point at the player who they think is the empath, is good looking, is suspicious, smells really good, is sharp dresser, is awesome, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, man. I don't get that.
Yeah, I don't think we ever played with that.
Because you would have always been voted as stinky, and that's not good.
That's why we never play with that role.
That was the only reason. We didn't want to hurt your feelings.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of this stuff is super, super fun. So doesn't mean it's for the traders, but we did go through a lot on here. I think we figured out a lot of roles. Do we want to do one more? I think the only thing we go through there, the curse was the only thing we liked out of that, right?
Pretty much.
What's the prince? Did we talk about the prince?
The prince just can't be killed. So like the prince essentially is just an immunity idol. Second most votes is dead.
That's right.
So we kind of rushed through that one.
Yeah, that's fine.
Cursed is really the only one that makes sense with those extended roles.
Okay. We also have, I'm seeing Family Man, Defender, Windy Wendy, Innocent Bystander, and the Sponge. These look like they're for other packs. Sponge does not wake up at night. Players who point at the sponge do not count. is the sponge has the most players pointing at him. The sponge, the player who is pointing at the most after the sponge is caught. I don't know. I think that's they're using different terminology.
They get so unbelievably complicated.
Which makes sense. I mean, it starts as a very simple, again, that's why I think most of the things we like are from the original game because they're more simple. But if you play that a lot, it can get repetitive and boring. And so you add more things, just as we've seen in, you know, 46 seasons of Survivor. Mm-hmm. It starts so simple and now we have all these complications.
Yeah.
So I think that's just the nature of any one of these kind of games. But yeah, good job, Phil. I think we did a good job here.
I think we covered it. The fantasy answer says, hey, specialist, it's blank from 47. I hope you'll have me on for a postseason recap. Love the show and can't wait to see your guys' draft. Email us. Tell us who you are. I want to know. Email us. Yeah.
I feel like
your money where your mouth is the fantasy answer. You said this last
comment come up and it's I haven't looked at the 47 cast because it's not out yet.
We're waiting for that last person and then we'll do a podcast.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can contact this person and we can find out who the last person is.
You can just tell me who it is and then we can just do it.
There we go. Well, thank you for listening, whoever you are. And hopefully you did a good job on the show.
Hopefully. All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for listening to this. This was a fun podcast. I really enjoyed going through all of these. Yeah, that's what we got for this week. We got some other stuff coming up in the future. But we're waiting for some things to fall into line. We're going to do a Peridium podcast again. We'll have him on again in the future. If you haven't checked out our James podcast for his perfect season 50, comes up with an idea of two games going against each other. That was a really fun discussion. A lot of Patreon content going over there. I've started 2017 version of Australian Survivor. I finished 2016 version. So my first episode about 2017 will be coming out Friday. So there's definitely some time for that. And yeah, I'm excited for all of you to listen to this. Let us know your thoughts. And maybe somebody from the traders will somehow listen to this and say, maybe we should add some roles because that would be fun. But that's it. That's what we got for now. Thank you for listening. Like the video, subscribe to the channel, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.